Good evening. My name is Cynthia Delostrinos-Johnson. I am the chair of the Planning and Economic Development, Planning and Community Development Committee. And I'm here with my fellow council members, Deshaun Quinn and Kathy Hogarty, as well as city staff. Our first item on today's agenda is a contract for consulting services for an economic development plan. And we have Derek Speck here in the flesh to talk about this item.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So this item on your packet starts on page one. So you've got a staff memo, and then attached to the staff memo, So the purpose of this item is to get the City Council's approval to authorize the mayor to enter into a contract with Community Attributes for up to $50,000 to create a community economic development plan for Tuckahoe. And so what's in your packet is the staff report that has some information about the plan, which would be the basic plan under this contract. It talks about work we would probably also do later called enhanced outreach, which we'll be returning to council later for once we get a contractor under contract and we can kind of jointly work on the scope of that. Talks about enhanced or improved business contacts database, which would be a later phase. And then in the packet is the RFQ we issued, and we issued that at the end of March, and we had the qualifications were due April 25th. We received qualifications from five different companies. You'll see them with an evaluation sheet on page five of your packet. And then the one that we're recommending is from Community Attributes, and their qualifications is starting on page seven. And so with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Councilmember Hogarty?
Yeah, so on page two, there's a three at the top of the page, and it says you're improving your business contact database. And we've talked about this a little bit more, but combination of purchasing a software tool and contacting our businesses, is that going to cost a lot, or did you have it in your in a budget somewhere? Are you putting it in next year's budget?
It's in a budget. It's actually in this year's budget.
Oh, okay.
So last year, the council authorized a total budget for the economic development plan of $150,000. $50,000 is generally allocated for basic outreach, which is what this contract is. The second $50,000 would be, sort of tentatively for enhanced outreach.
Okay.
Although that number, I'm not really promoting to the contractor. We just want to kind of see what makes sense. And then the remaining $50,000, whatever is not spent, could be used for that business database.
Okay. And thank you for including their RFQ, because it was really interesting to go through. And like you said, they're sort of the fun group, and I can see why you selected them. And Chris Mefford is great. And so, yeah, thank you for including that. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Councilmember Quinn?
So I reviewed the RFQ. The memo is very straightforward, and I would agree with Chris Mefford is really good.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a couple of things in here that I really liked, which was kind of the pairing of equity and prosperity. And I think he's bringing that definitely from Greater Seattle Partners. And then I liked some of the history. For example, Kenmore, which they've seen a significant kind of increase. The one question I have, two questions. So the first question is, in here, it's not explicit, but, you know, looking at our budget and the dropping of revenue sources, and, I mean, I guess you could apply it to some of the kind of responses to RFQ, but, you know, I think I would be interested in really kind of building that revenue base, you know, with some of the topics, there's definitely an opportunity for that. And then the second thing, since we approved the community connectors, you know, I think we don't have to exclusively rely on their equitable and inclusive outreach. We can build it within, and since we already approved it. So I know that's going to be discussed with kind of Naisha and the group, but I think that they could potentially enhance what's here and also kind of give a real kind of place example. So just kind of wondering your thoughts on those two things.
Sure. I think your point about, increasing revenue, I think that will be a very key thing to consider in the economic development plan, one of the key, questions. There may be other key questions, and so what I could see happening is when we start the engagement process and we start hearing, I'm sure one of the early steps will be is just hearing from the council right off the bat. What are some key questions on people's minds? And then we'll see what sort of floats to the top, and we'll make sure that gets included in, the work and the process. And it could be there are some key questions that maybe have to be answered this year. There could be some key questions that maybe are things that are outside the $50,000 that the city may want to come back on next year, but we can cross that bridge when we get to it. And then in terms of the outreach, by all means, we're happy to work with, whichever groups and the connectors. The nice thing about having that $50,000 is all of the five firms, even though they're especially four, very qualified, none of them by themselves can do the outreach that's needed. Right. Nobody has all that in-house. So I think we're going to end up needing to do some contracting with some other community-based organizations and asking for them to go under contract for helping with that outreach. And so we'll just kind of see, one of the firms, they sort of did a very informal like request to the different, firms and said, okay, who can help and who do you serve? Who do you reach? What are your ideas for methods on how we can reach and get input? And then we would negotiate contracts with them based on that. So my hunch is we'll probably do an email or a little, and a phone call to all different community groups we know of and just see who would like to go under a contract and who can they reach.
Yeah, I really like that kind of community-centered approach and potentially separating out from a large package that then would subcontract and may or may not get a portion of the work, sort of pull it out and have it stand alone. That's really good. Thank you.
I've reviewed the materials. I like the way that you're approaching this in terms of working with this firm with lots of experience. But I went through all of the different cities projects that they've worked on, and they are definitely, exceptionally qualified to do this basic plan. And I like the way you split it out, where it's start with a basic plan, but we know that we want to do this more extended outreach plan. And I like that because what we're looking for that might be different than what this firm could bring. Yeah. Or in our discussions with the firm, it reminds me of the process that we went through with just the teen and senior center, where I'm blanking on the name of the company that we worked with that did like our justice center, partnered with a community group to do the outreach. And it was kind of this like, I don't want to say it was like a mentorship model, but it's like, oh, we could do community outreach good, but you guys can do plans well.
Mm-hmm.
And if there could be some kind of, mentorship opportunity to partner like community outreach with this organization that's really, across our region is doing this economic development work, that could be a lasting partnership beyond just Tukwila that could help other cities. So, like, I just like the approach that you're taking here, and I'm happy, I'm in agreement moving this forward. My other council members, how do you feel about about making a recommendation? The next step is for it to go to committee of the whole. And are you comfortable with a recommendation to approve or to like to move this forward? Okay.
we'll see you at the COW one day. Thank you. I'm going to take off here and get some space.
Give us some space. Thank you. All right. The next item is an ordinance revising Tukwila Municipal Code, Section 1604250, regarding construction permits. I want to note that we received an email prior to this meeting, which Laurel has provided for us copies of. It's from Mark Fazzali, and I'll just pass it out to my fellow council members. I haven't had an opportunity to read it yet, but thank you, Mark. I see that you are online. Thank you for sending it. Know that we have it, and we will be reviewing it. All right, Jerry Height, please begin your presentation.
Yes, good evening. What I'm presenting is a municipal code housekeeping revision to 2MC 16.4 or 0.04.250. Two key sections. One of them is C, item C for work without a permit. Basically revising this so that it adds clarity to what type of work does require a permit, and that when you it does require a permit if you don't receive one prior to start work, there is fees involved that need to be paid, additional fees. Currently, moving on to the next one, 1604-250E, combines the expiration of permits and applications for permits, and having the expiration for permits and the permit applications combined has caused issues in the past regarding the permit applications actually expiring during plan review, because it goes more than 180 days. And that causes a lot of inconvenience with the applicant and also staff. Most of the permit applications are completed within 180 days. It's, larger projects, though, or projects with architects that have difficulties, or they end up having their permits expired. So what we're trying to do here is separate the expiration for permits, and create a new section F for permit applications, so they won't expire. We've added some verbiage in the time limitations of the permits, and we have some clarifying verbiage for submittal documents and the timeline. So pretty simple housekeeping, really just changing a few things will provide a better service to the public and also help staff in their daily operations. So, questions?
I guess if I could just add a little clarification. Laura Gerloff, Community Development Director. I think there was a little bit of a misunderstanding with the public comment that we received, and the way the expiration is proposing to work under the new code is that once a permit is issued, as long as the applicant calls for inspections at least every 6 months, that permit stays alive and there's no need for us to grant extensions to it. So that two extensions is basically saying if you get a permit issued and you don't do any work for 18 months, that's when it would expire. It's not if you continue to work on it and it's not that you have to be done with work within 18 months. You just need to call for an inspection every 6 months. So just wanted to make sure that that point was clear with everyone.
Thank you, Nora.
Council Member Hogarty.
Yeah, well, since we have a letter regarding a concern with that, maybe we need to make that language a little more clear. Just some sort of language that makes sure that somebody doesn't read this and misunderstand that, and then that would make that address that concern for those types of projects, of which there aren't, those are the big projects. So I think that working on the verbiage to be clear that as long as there's an inspection every 6 months, the permit stays active would be good. And then the other thing that I have is on page 29, I have a question with E, The explanation about sending a courtesy letter to the applicant 30 days prior to expiration, and then it says, however, the letter is sent to the applicant, which could be an individual that's relocated, so they don't get the letter. And I was wondering how difficult it would be to be just a little bit more proactive than that and send maybe an email or two as well, even though, like, they could go out into the universe, right? But that would sometimes people don't get their mail, don't read their mail, but they do read their emails, and if you've done the emails and the letter, then you can't really do it. You can knock on their door, but that's, you know, there's too many permits. But my only suggestion was just to bump up the customer service a little bit. And again, I don't direct staff what to do, but so that's a suggestion of like a way that makes sure that people aren't, it's just not slipping through the cracks. So, or whatever way you want to make it not slip through the cracks. And so that was my other suggestion or comment.
Councilmember Quinn?
I don't disagree with Councilmember Hogarty, and I would just say this. Derek and Nora, I mean, at least I've heard you in the past say the whole point is to have communication and let it continue, and that there isn't a break. It's like, if we can communicate with you, we can work with you. And so I think what's being proposed makes sense. And then I'll add another layer. There is a financial component to people doing business with Tukwila, and that is a concern. But what I hear you saying is that, and potentially we'll add some clarifying language in here around the process, because sometimes you can just, you read the black and white and then you're like, okay, there's no flexibility. So it also helps to enhance, since we kind of elevated it. And then for the email, I also support that. And the question is just, again, striking a balance between kind of staff time. And so maybe it's just a process that it just becomes automatic and it isn't arbitrary. It is just a part of the process. 1, 2, 3. That way we are also projecting and modeling. Communication is important to us. So, I mean, again, as I read this on its face, I can see the intent and then also the follow-up information about how you keep it still as an active permit and the process. And the question I guess I would also have is, how can we also make sure that gets out, that process, although it's changed, the steps are clear.
So this is one of the streamlining efforts that we've undertaken. And the old process, where every permit would expire when they hit that 6-month or 12-month mark, was creating a huge workload for the permit center to get those notices out every month. And so now that the notices will only need to go out to people who haven't responded to a correction letter within 6 months, that workload is going to be much reduced. And I think we will have more time to do more handholding and outreach, because we're not dealing with 100 notices. Maybe I'm hoping that we're only dealing with a handful. So I think that will really help us with that communication effort.
Okay.
So I had a couple of questions. I want to follow up on the note that you were just saying in terms of what's required of for a check-in, because I appreciate these streamlining efforts. I know we've been really working hard at trying to find ways to really streamline the process. What is required now? Like, what is that? I'm not a developer, but just explaining, like, what does that check-in look like? Just saying, like, hey, can you come and do an inspection? Or just checking and saying, hey, we're still working on this project, and that's enough of a check-in that's necessary.
So while it's still in the application phase, before it's issued, what we need is a response to the correction letter. So if we say on page 12, you don't meet setbacks, on page 18, you know, whatever, they need to give us a new set of plans that addresses those corrections. So they need to get us to a point where we can approve it. So we need a response from them. And 6 months is, I think, a very reasonable time to get that back. Most people are back within a month because they want their permits and they're usually following up on them pretty quickly. Once it's been issued and they're in the construction phase, it's doing enough work to call for an inspection. And so, you know, that varies by what they're doing out there, but if they're working on it, they should be hitting that. There shouldn't be a problem. You know, it's really, we're trying to get at the ones where people, you know, come in and try and vest to a certain code, but then don't actually build it and are dragging that permit out for a long time. That's really not the intent. So we want them to get the permit when they're ready to build. We help them move forward, but they need to keep at it.
Mm-hmm. I had a question about the work without a permit change. You're changing it in how it is now. It says that there's an investigation fee, and then we're changing the language to say that the fee is double. You're charged double based on the fee schedule. What does that difference look like? Like, what is the investigation fee versus, like, I'm just wondering what the difference is, and I'm sorry for not, like, checking on that, but I thought I could ask my questions here.
Let's have Jerry.
Okay.
The investigation fee is the same. It's just a double fee. This just clarifies to the public, like I say, what is required for a permit, and if you don't get one, then this is what we're going to, the additional fee is what it's going to cost you.
Okay. So it's just being more clear about what that fee is.
Clarify the verbiage.
Okay. And my last question that I had was answered. I mean, Council Member Fogarty gave like a good suggestion for clarifying the language. And then I just had a question about the expiration of permits, which are, what are the concerns or problems that we are seeing which cause this to need to be changed? And I think you explained that in terms of the streamlining, wanting to streamline, wanting to limit the number of notices that are sent out.
And it doesn't make sense for us to expire a permit while we're reviewing that permit, you know, mm-hmm. just because that arbitrary 6-month time limit happens to fall. So we really want it to be permits that aren't being pursued, where we're not hearing anything back, we're not getting those revisions returned to us. That's the time.
Okay. Are there any follow-up questions from council members? All right. The request is for this to go to the committee as a whole. Well, sorry.
Okay. On 523.
Committee of the whole, 523. Are we comfortable making a recommendation?
Yeah.
Okay. Clarification?
So we'll look at clarifying.
Yeah.
Language about inspections extending.
Yeah. All right. And the last item on our agenda, and I just want to give everyone notice, I believe we have two miscellaneous tonight, and it looks like we'll probably have time, is the discussion on recent emails regarding housing types in low-density residential zones. And Nora, we have you on that item, and this is discussion only.
Yeah, so this came out of a rental housing licensing issue, and we have there's a longtime landlord who had run what appears to be, and from the research we've done, it seems like it was a duplex that was built about 100 years ago, and that at some point that duplex became a fourplex, not really clear, but myths of time. Perhaps prior to annexation, but certainly well in advance of the rental housing program being in place. And so it appears that it was done without permits. We don't see anything from King County. We certainly don't see any Tukwila permits for that. You know, at the time we started the rental housing inspection program, there was a lot of concern among landlords that we were going to try and ferret out every single code violation or whatever, all at the same time. And
I think the decision at that point was we were really concerned about life safety. Our concern with rental housing was quality housing for people to live in. And so we weren't going to try and investigate every sort of anomaly that we might find out there. We may or may not feel that that was a good decision, but that was the approach that was taken at the time. So years go by. The original property owner passes away, and now her estate is selling the property. And it's what often happens, not just in this case, but just in general, when work happens without a permit, is that people want to sell it as having a bonus room or a detached garage or an ADU, and they'd like the city to, you know, potential buyers may call the city and ask about that, and we don't have much to say other than we don't have records with that. And it can put them in a tough spot because we can't really certify that it meets code when it doesn't meet code. So, you know, kind of here we are. I think we've tried to think about, well, you know, often we say, well, if you built that bonus room without permits, you could come in for an after-the-fact permit, and then we'll do the inspections, and then we'll be able to say, yes, it meets code. If it's something that really doesn't meet code, like you expanded into your setback, you know, then it becomes, you know, more of an issue. In this case, we don't have life safety concerns. It has been in place for many years. So just trying to brainstorm ways through the situation. You know, that it could be sold sort of in an as-is way and let the new owner decide how they would like to handle it. It could, many times we let people remove improvements and go back to the last officially permitted item, which seems to have been a duplex under King County regulation at the time. It did strike me that this is kind of the missing middle housing that we've been talking about as being not meeting our current regulations, but, you know, maybe actually fitting in pretty well with the context, you know, especially if it's maybe done in a way that doesn't look like an apartment building, but looks more like a big house or a duplex, so you fit in a couple more units too. So it might be worth thinking about as we move forward with the comp plan. Are we, do we think we might be addressing this kind of situation in the future? The classic way to address this might be a rezone. It's adjacent, it's single family, but it's adjacent to a commercial zone. And so you might be able to talk with a couple neighbors and maybe have a buffer of multifamily zoning between that commercial zone and the single family zone. That would require some coordination, and, you know, we have to go through the analysis, and it's not a quick or a cheap process, so it's not an easy fix by any means, but it is an avenue that could be available to a property owner. You know, there can be unintended consequences to things like that. If you upzone a property, you might also increase the chances that a new owner would tear it down and rebuild something to a higher density. And there's really no guarantee that a future owner would continue to operate the property in the way that the past owner has. So there are a lot of unknowns around it, but I'm happy to kind of answer questions and think through this with you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hogarty, do you have thoughts, questions?
Did you find any records from King County where it was a duplex? They list it as a duplex in the assessor's records.
Okay, so they do list it as a duplex, so that's an important piece of information.
They have it as four bedrooms, two baths.
Okay. And the reason that I asked that is because it's a 102-year-old building, like 1920. Yeah. And so at some point, if it was, has it been listed that since 1920? So here's the thing. Okay, so that's what it is. If there was any records, and to ask the applicant to provide those records, they could have been records from 1930 or 1940 or 1950. And how reasonable is it to ask them to produce those records. And so that's one thing. But the second part that I have layered on top of that is the fact that the rental housing program, which is in the DCD department, licensed 4 units. So you license 4 units, and the people that live there and the people that own it are going to say, you're licensing this, so it is valid. And so that's where I think that it should be a non-conforming use, unless it's a nuisance property. Because we're not here to make life miserable for our residents, and we do need to have some rules, but there's times when I think it's reasonable to let something stay as it is, and this is one of those cases. And again, it's because it's the twofold thing. The first thing being that the records are so old and so inaccessible, and the second thing being that we chose to license all 4 units, which implies that it's a use that is non-conforming or whatever. And if that was messaged to somebody, it should have been in writing. You don't just say, hey, people that live here or whoever, you know, when the time comes, we're going to change this. That's big. That message, I think, should have been in writing and told that to the owner, and the city should be able to produce that. So that's my take on it. And you're right. I mean, we're going to the same place with we need middle housing. I just think that we can be more flexible to assist with the people that live here.
Councilmember Quinn?
So I appreciate what Councilmember Hogarty said about us doing a licensing process. And maybe staying in the non-conforming use. I think when we get into the area of upzoning, I believe we have to commit to the process of the impacts. Community knows what's coming. Are there concerns? There's no fourplex there other than their own visible interpretation. And I like the fact that there is no life safety issues. I think I'm okay with a non-conforming use. However, like, if you don't comply and you turn it into a fourplex, I mean, that's not the city's fault. That is the property owner's fault that didn't go through the steps to get it approved. Because if you think about it, it's 100 years ago, there's been several code changes related to sprinkler systems, those other components, which in some ways the fire department relies on in their kind of response process. So I don't think I kind of have a great idea, but I think if we can provide a little bit of certainty to this property owner, and if it is the longer process to upzone, that makes me feel better about the residents that live around this, because that is part of our process, and I'm more concerned about that than I am about the city saying you can continue to operate, because that will have more of a long-lasting impact on the residents if we just arbitrarily upzone.
Are you saying that they should wait because at that time they'd have to turn it back into a duplex? They wait for the upzone?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you get around a process in neighborhoods by not going to the folks that would be impacted.
Answer is yes, you think it should be turned back to a duplex? Because if you wait for the upzone, that's what they're going to have to do, unless they make it non-conforming.
Yeah, well, that's why I was saying the non-conforming seems to work.
I see, yeah.
But not the full upzone.
Yeah.
Which is a process that would come later.
Yeah.
Don't try to
do a fix and upzone
and say that we're going to
like immediately. What,
can you explain the non-conforming use and what that means, or if that's even an option in this instance?
So at least the previous property owner, the original property owner, was aware that this was a gray area and that we were not, it wasn't a get out of jail free card. It was a, you know, we're dealing with these issues and not with those issues. And it continued on for a long time. There are other properties in the city that are like this, some illegal ADUs, again, that we didn't prosecute at the time. I don't feel that the property owner has been harmed by delaying enforcement action on this. They've had the use and the value of it for an additional decade. So I guess we just want to think clearly, if we're sort of changing our policy and saying, well, if it was here when we found it, we're saying it's okay, as opposed to if we act to affirm it, sort of a shift. And I think we should think carefully about the implications of that.
How do you get around, one, giving kind of almost a gift to approve it as a fourplex, and then have the community that would be directly impacted because they didn't go through the process, and yet we don't know where the permit is? You can almost give the property owner the option to go take it back to a duplex and they can sell it like that, or go through the process of upzone.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've tried to, there's no perfect outcome on here. I think we just tried to give a few options, some of which are pretty laissez-faire. Go ahead and sell it to a willing purchaser, and then we try and work with that person.
So if that was the option of saying selling as is, we're not saying convert it back, but we're saying you're selling it, and it, you got to tell the next property owner that this is the issue that you're inheriting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What about the people who are living there? What about the four different people? Is that just...
They'd stay? Well, who knows if
they'd stay. You're selling as is.
But they really would still... There's no change to the configuration.
A new property owner could come in and double the rents if they felt like it, or they could continue to operate it as it has been operated, or, you know, they could be buying it as a... I mean, it would be hard to tell what a new owner might think.
Yeah. So did you say new owner can operate it as it is, as a fourplex?
Well, yeah. I think we're saying that at some point it needs to be dealt with. Probably makes sense at the time that property changes hands, but it could be delayed to the new property owner to deal with. Whether they wanted to try and, again, you can either change the zoning for everyone, like Missing Middle. You could change the zoning just for this parcel and maybe a couple neighbors to, you know, the medium density residential, which would allow something like this, maybe.
We're going to be addressing this comp plan,
mm-hmm.
like starting now, right? And so if they were able to stay in the units, and like you said, the next landlord might be a bad landlord, or they might let them stay. But if they were able to stay, knowing that there's going to be a change coming on the horizon, at least they wouldn't be just out. And it wouldn't be like, okay, it's sold, got to go back to a duplex. The new owner could do that, but the new owner would have the option of keeping that until we figure out the overall zoning, which I think is really what you were saying, Deshaun.
Yep.
And that to me seems like a reasonable compromise. And just like, let them stay there, but they know that, you know, heads up, eventually something's going to be changing, and it might mean that you have to move out. But they're going to have some time to adjust and prepare for that. So that seems, I understand that. I do understand that.
So I guess, obviously, this is very early and vague, but trying to get a sense from the council about whether something like redefining single family to include a wider variety of housing types is something that's on the table for this comp plan discussion. It's obviously been a contentious issue over the years.
However, the landscape has changed significantly since the last time we addressed this. And so I think we're going to be, it's going to be a different, and we have a different council, so it's going to be a different story. It's my sense from what I see. And Deshaun's smiling, so maybe his too, maybe.
You know, I think from, at least for me, is spot zoning to me is not the answer, and it never should be. And I think having that conversation and that engagement with community and neighborhoods before we make that shift makes sense. So then to not do something super special on this is respectful of that. And, you know, when you do have that conversation with the neighbors that say, hey, whoever's going to purchase this, they're going to be on a plan to, you know, request a rezone, and then that could lead to more opportunities in the community. I'd rather know that as someone who either says yes or no to say, okay, I'm ready for it, versus finding it out after you kind of move in and it's like, oh, well, what's going in across the street? It wasn't there when I looked at the house, but wow, there's a big sign up there now. And then I also think around the people who live there, I mean, unfortunately, the way our system is, like, I've lived in apartments where you know they got new ownership and you prepare. Because they are not obligated to do anything but, you know, what's best for them.
Just as a little point of order, we recently, like Thursday, got some information from the Department of Commerce that there's some planning grants that have come out. So one of them is just basically an allocation. It's a grant, but it's no match. It's everybody gets it to work on their comp plan. Hmm. There's another one that's missing middle. So it's, I think, potentially up to $80,000. I know. Yeah, so if we thought we were interested in doing up to $100,000, we wanted to incorporate some missing middle analysis as part of our comp plan. There is some money potentially available. The deadline is really quick, right? So
you need to throw another miscellaneous in there.
So what we were thinking as we've come on the 6th, when we've had a little bit of chance to look at it, if it seemed like something that was worth thinking about, because it is that really short turnaround time. There's another one for climate change. That one, there's sort of two phases. There's the early adopter grant, which is like, we basically have it in our back pocket, we're ready to move forward with it, and then they think there'll be another round of funding in 2023, which is probably what the timing that we're on, since we really haven't spent any time focusing on climate policy so far. So just a heads up, we go for the allocation grant. I'm seeing some nods of interest, so we'll work on the missing middle, there's some strings, and we'll have to decide whether that fits with what we'd like to do, but we'll try and get you an update at the next PCD.
That's our next meeting, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so at the next
meeting. So I think that's good, and just thinking back to the comp plan discussion, 2016, so much fun. One of the things that we said, though, was encouraging a more intense development around transportation corridors. So as we think about this missing middle, I think what we said then is if we build around those transportation corridors, that actually protects the single-family neighborhoods. And that, to me, I still have that same belief. So upzoning across the city, to me, why would we do that if we know that if you can put two things together, the likelihood of success for community members goes up. So, I mean, that's just where I am right now as it relates to single-family neighborhoods. Let's get through the ones, and it's not like it has not been easy, but I think people need to hear that more often, that we're supporting a more intense development around transportation corridors. So, one, you have the option to be against it, but we actually are being proactive on thinking, you know, and strategizing where intense development can go.
And I think part of that discussion should be some design standards, because part of it is fitting in, right?
Yeah,
and
sure.
Designing things in such a way that the additional density looks good, but also,
yeah.
You know, lessens the impact on the neighbors to the extent possible, given that they're generally going to be bigger buildings.
Right. Like 154 station.
Right.
Huge.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a good direction. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thanks, Sarah. Okay, we have two miscellaneous. Councilmember Hogarty, you had one miscellaneous item. And then Rachel Bianchi has one miscellaneous item for us. So go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So you actually, Cynthia, had brought this up.
Oh yeah.
but I took the ball and ran with it, to use an analogy. And that was that you asked about if we could get a report back on the status of parking at Bellwether and at Chegg. And now I'm going to hand it back over to you because you had some thoughts on that. My ask is to bring a report back to this committee.
Yeah. And I see that Brandon's on here, and Brandon, I know you've been taking lead on the what is your what I was looking for was
Brandon,
the
you're here.
Oh. Are you here, Brandon? Get back in.
My apologies.
Well, you didn't know this was coming up.
Yeah, sorry. This is a miscellaneous. But Laurel is step ahead of us. This is just a miscellaneous wanted clarification on, we had the update from the Watch to Your project, and one of the things that I talked about is wanting to have, like, to learn lessons learned or more information from Bellwether and Shad. What I was really looking for was information on the development agreement as it was to parking. So, like Councilmember Hogarty said, for Bellwether, it was one-to-one that was agreed to. I want to know what it was for Shag, like what was the parking ratio for Shag? And then a more, I don't say it was a more detailed.
Or like how'd that work, how's that working
how
for
that
them?
Working?
How's that working for them?
Okay.
And examples of that, because I know you said that they were working it through, but like, we need more information. What does working it through mean? What are the issues that they're having? How are they solving those issues?
Yeah. And Derek is the lead on Shag, but we're happy. And
okay.
we're happy. There's more background that we can provide on both Bellwether and Shag and exactly what happened. I think one of the things with Shag is I think there are some early, and rightfully so, some early problems that happened when that second phase was still under construction. We didn't have all that parking lined up. And there are some issues with the management, and they've been working to resolve that. But I can definitely prepare, we'll show something, we'll talk about what we agree to, and then we'll also talk about the mitigation measures that we've been trying to implement with Shag. So.
I remember what it was at Shag when the buildings weren't completed, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, there was a parking issue, but I go up there now and I don't see that same issue. Like I could find parking, but I don't know what it is at all times during the day. So I'd just be interested in more information there as we're trying to work through this parking.
Definitely. And I appreciate you saying that because as Derek and I actually share that same thing, which is I've gone up to Shag like three times in the last kind of like months, and every time I've gone there, I found parking. Now, again, I could be going at off times. There could be times where other people are going during peak times and are not able to find parking. And so we can definitely get some detail on that.
So, Brandon, my comment's specific to Shag because you can kind of tell the evolution of it. is there were tentative agreements up front, which was a calamity with the library and the residential. And then once you saw those parking lots come online, and I run that way every morning, there is no parking issue in the evening or early in the morning. There are so many open spots. So just that progression might actually be helpful, because I think you could kind of, I'm not saying that this happened, but you could kind of be clever by half, like let's let it be tough for a while, because I know these things are going to come online, these garages are going to be built, and you know, by the time the second one went up, it was like no problem.
Right.
So
yeah, no, we definitely look at getting some data about how it's functioning and what are the down, what are down times and what are kind of our peak times up there. So.
Okay. And it could just come back.
Yeah, yeah. To the committee.
Okay,
yeah.
Definitely.
Thank
you. Yeah. Sorry. Not a problem. My apology. I was on the screen, but I ran to tell Derek something. So I forgot.
I forgot we have these virtual meetings like this, so.
Okay. Rachel.
So,
oh, wait.
Before this item, I'm going to step out. Thank you.
Deshaun has to leave. About King County.
Oh, okay.
Related.
I keep forgetting. Oh, yeah. I know what it is. It helps for housing. Yeah. I just find, you know, my brain's so wrapped up in the item before that it's not shifting gears. Yeah.
Okay.
Good evening, committee members. For the record, Rachel Bianchi, Deputy City Administrator. I'm back before you today with a conversation that was initiated early in 2021, and this has to do with the King County's Health Through Housing Program. You may remember, although there's been a lot going on, that King County came in and gave you all a presentation about Health Through Housing in February of 2021. This is the program that the county started with some sales tax funds that they received from the legislature, and then a legislative tweak in the 2020 session that allowed the county to go and acquire hotel motels for use of creating homeless shelters. And so the county has been out acquiring those properties. They gave you that presentation in February, we had some different discussions about things. As a part of the county's effort, they've been committed to working with jurisdictions where these properties are located. That's a key part of their commitment, as well as it's in the legislation that gave them the legislative fix that they needed to be able to use existing construction. We had left it with the county that they could go ahead and have their broker approach a property in Tukwila that meets their needs. Just as a quick reminder, that this has to be a property that has an interior corridor. So think of it more as what we traditionally think of as a hotel versus a motel, right? The committee went ahead and gave the county that permission to have their broker reach out with the idea that there was still a long ways away. And so the process here is, if the county broker were to reach out, you'd have to find out whether or not the property owner was a willing seller, first of all. They would have to go through appraisal process to see whether or not they would be anywhere close to a number that they could agree on. And then at that point, if the county still wanted to move forward, they had committed that they would work with us on a number of things. So fast forward to recently, late last year, the county approached us and said actually they weren't looking at any more properties in Tukwila. So just as a reminder, they've made acquisitions in Auburn, Federal Way, Kirkland, Redmond, Renton. They have they have five sites in Seattle. And I feel like there's another North End city that should be on that list. Anyway, so the county has come back. They've looked at their checkbook, as they said, right? They have some additional funds that they may or may not be able to spend on one more property. And they would like to go ahead and approach a property owner in Tukwila that, again, meets the requirements that they have, but they don't want to do that without council consent. And so King County staff asked that I come and see whether or not you all were in agreement for them to, again, very early on in this process, just initiate a conversation whether or not there was a willing seller. So this does not mean that if you gave, you know, if you gave the nod today for the county to go ahead and approach this property, this does not necessarily mean that Tukwila is quote unquote a willing city. And I use that phrase because it's in the legislation, right? But it would initiate the process. You would still potentially have off ramps if that's what you were interested in. So I'm here to answer any more questions or to get your thoughts. Just as a reminder, the last time it was committee that gave permission for the county to move forward and reach out, even though they didn't do that in the end. So happy to answer any questions. Appreciate you letting us walk this on today.
We have a quorum.
I'm comfortable with the initial reach out. I mean, like you said, there are off ramps, and this is just an initial inquiry, but it doesn't mean that we are quote unquote saying that we're a willing city. But you know, we're a regional player in this. That's how I feel.
So last year I was the chair of this committee when a lot of this was going through, and I just put this whole thing through the ringer, and Rachel can attest to that. Lots of questions, lots of what if, which I will ask again later about services, surrounding services and everything. But I've gotten to the point where I'm comfortable with proceeding with this step because I now see that all those other things that I think are important can be discussed later on. So the answer is yes, I'm fine with it too. So you have maybe your green light? Maybe?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Well, I will report back once I get more information.
I was like, I'm bringing out the sponge. It was really a lot, but it just really helped me to do that. You know, I need to do that in order to feel comfortable. So,
Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Rachel.
That's it. Okay. Let me shut this down.